walk across the courtyard towards the library. I can hear the insects buzzing the leaves beneath my feet. Ramble up the stairwell.
Hi, I'm Athenia, chairman of the Kodiak Public Library Association, or KPLA. The KPLA is a fun association dedicated to promoting and supporting all things library. This is the first ever show of Dog-Eared Reads, fetching books, reads, and tales, and we're proud to be bringing you this fantastic program. What we have for you today is Beyond the Cover, our first segment, which is interviews with library guests and authors. Today on our segment, we have Sandor Ellis-Katz. If you haven't heard the buzz that Sandor is coming, or you don't know what all the excitement is about, listen up! Sandor's a fermentation revivalist and author of The Art of Fermentation. He's taught hundreds of workshops throughout America and the world, and he's coming to the Kodiak Public Library on July 31st to give a fermentation workshop. After our interview with Sandor, we have a segment I'm very excited about called Community Roar, or Rave Over Amazing Reads. In that segment, we have some Kodiak community members coming in to help us with reviews to let us know what they're reading. And lastly on our show is the segment we like to call Lively Live Chats. Katie Baxter, Kodiak Public Library's director, will be joining us later in the hour to tell us about upcoming programs and services at the library in the next few weeks. Lots of library happenings are in the works. Tune in for details. So, to start the show, without further ado, I bring you our first segment, Beyond the Cover.
Take off those glasses and let down your hair for me.
Welcome to Beyond the Cover, our segment in Dog-Eared Reads where we'll talk with authors and guest speakers coming to the Kodiak Public Library. In today's segment of Beyond the Cover, we'll chat with Sandor Katz, author of Wild Fermentation and The Revolution Will Not Be Microwaved, Inside America's Underground Food Movements. Wild Fermentation has been called the manifesto in the Bible for do-it-yourself fermentists. His most recent book, The Art of Fermentation, won the James Beard Award, and the New York Times calls him one of the unlikely rock stars of the American food scene. Katz lives in Tennessee and describes himself as a fermentation revivalist. He has given workshops and spoken all over the country, and will be in Alaska over the next couple of weeks. On July 31st at 5:30 p.m., Katz will join us at the Kodiak Public Library as a part of the Kitchen Gardener series with a workshop on the art of fermentation. The workshop's description reads, "Come learn how simple it is to make your own kimchi, kefir, and other fermented delicacies. Learn about the healing qualities and the nutritional importance of live culture ferments, as well as their illustrious history and integral role in human cultural evolution. Empower yourself with simple techniques for fermenting these healthful foods in your home. Be part of the fermentation revival." Sandor Katz, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on. Pleasure to be with you.
Well, let's start at the beginning. What's fermentation?
Well, broadly speaking, fermentation is the transformative action of microorganisms. Generally, we use this word in relation to foods and beverages. So they're foods and beverages that are created by microbial action.
And so what are some common ferments?
Well, I mean, you know, most people in most parts of the world enjoy products of fermentation on a daily basis. You know, one scholar actually estimated that one-third of all food that human beings eat has been transformed by fermentation before we put it in our mouths. Some examples would be bread, cheese, cured meats, coffee, chocolate. You know, the list goes on and on. I mean, up in the north of Alaska, people never could have settled in the Arctic region without, you know, having techniques for effectively preserving, fish and marine mammals from summer when the waterways are accessible to get them through the winter. So that's fermentation. Sauerkraut, kimchi, and other methods of preserving vegetables from seasons of plenty to get people through seasons of relative scarcity, that's fermentation. So fermentation actually has, you know, many varied manifestations. Soy sauce is fermentation, fish sauce is fermentation, vinegar, which is the base of all the condiments that, you know, we enjoy in the standard American diet, those are all based on fermentation. So, you know, fermentation is very, very integral to, culinary traditions, in the U.S. and really in every other part of the world as well.
In your book, you talk about the difference between wild and cultured fermentation. What's the difference there?
Well, I mean, wild fermentation really describes fermentation based on the organisms that are spontaneously present on the food that you are fermenting or to a limited degree in your environment. You know, conceptually, all fermentations had to begin as wild fermentation events in some particular place. But we've learned, lots of different ways of perpetuating these cultures. So let's say something like yogurt. Yogurt, began as a spontaneous event somewhere. The first person who made yogurt did not have mature yogurt to use as a starter. But if you or I want to make yogurt, all we do is get some, mature live culture yogurt and use that as a starter. And so we perpetuate the culture by introducing a small amount of it into the next batch. Whereas something like sauerkraut, nobody really uses a starter for sauerkraut because all the bacteria that you need are so abundantly present on the vegetables that you are fermenting. So wild fermentation, simply is a way of describing ferments based on the organisms that are present on the food, or in the environment, whereas culturing implies that you're introducing some sort of a starter.
So then you recommend just using wild or cultured based on what type of fermentation you want, or do you usually prefer one over another for people just starting out?
Well, I mean, really, for most people, I would recommend as a starting place fermenting vegetables, just because you don't need to obtain a special starter culture. It's all on the vegetables. You don't need special equipment. You can use a jar that's already sitting around in your kitchen. There's no case history of food poisoning or illness. So in terms of, people's projections of fear upon bacterially rich foods, there's absolutely no reason to be afraid. Plus it's easy, it's delicious, it's supportive of good health, and you can enjoy your results relatively quickly. So I generally recommend that people start with fermenting vegetables, something like sauerkraut. But cultured foods can be very easy as well. Kombucha, you have to obtain a culture, but once you have it, the process of making kombucha with that culture is very straightforward. Yogurt involves a little bit of temperature manipulation, so that makes it a little bit harder, but it's not that hard. You just, heat up the milk to about 180 degrees, cool it down to about 110 degrees, introduce the culture, and then you have to rig up something to incubate it and maintain it around 110 degrees Fahrenheit. I just use an insulated cooler that I preheat with hot water. So I try to keep things low tech and approachable for people to think about doing in their home kitchens. I mean, people have been practicing fermentation for at least 10,000 years with tools that are much simpler than what you'll find in any of our contemporary home kitchens. So we definitely can do it in our contemporary kitchen.
So what compelled you to write The Art of Fermentation in your other books?
I got interested in fermentation, largely through the experience of having a garden for the first time and realizing that all of the cabbage is ready at the same time. And so as a result of that, I learned how to make sauerkraut. And then one thing led to another, and I just became obsessed with all things fermented. But what I realized as I began to share it with people is people projected all of this fear on it. Like, okay, sauerkraut is a bacterially rich food, so how do I know that I have good bacteria growing in my sauerkraut and not bad bacteria that might make my family sick or even kill someone? So I just realized that, because of this general, cultural fear of bacteria, and, that's our indoctrination into what I would describe as the war on bacteria, this sort of idea that bacteria in general are bad, people, became very fearful of these, important fermented foods. And so I decided that I would try to demystify fermentation for people and make it more approachable. And I did that first in a couple of small workshops, and I realized how exciting and satisfying that was. And then I wrote a little zine that I self-published, and that led me into writing a book, which led me into further teaching, and then ultimately another book. You know, fermentation is a vast, vast subject. I mean, there are you know, different fermentation traditions everywhere, and you know, in some of the traditions that have spread far, you know, there are distinctive local variations everywhere. So I mean, I just find it to be endlessly fascinating learning about fermentation, and also really, really fun to demystify it, and people see how easy and safe it is. And in fact, you know, fermentation has been a strategy for food safety. You know, and in general, the process of fermentation actually makes food safer than it starts out being.
So in The Art of Fermentation and Wild Fermentation, you cite studies on the health benefits of fermented foods, as well as talk about how eating fermented foods have helped you with your own wellness and living with HIV. Can you share with us how fermented foods have helped you personally, but also what those health benefits are for everyone?
There's so many different fermented foods that it's hard to generalize. I mean, obviously, you know, salami, bread, yogurt, sauerkraut, and chocolate do not have, you know, identical nutritional qualities. You know, but the process of fermentation definitely transforms foods in some clear patterns of ways. So the first one I would describe is predigestion, and this is the idea that you know, complex nutrients, some of which can be difficult for us to digest, get broken down into simpler forms before we eat them. So nutrients become more bioavailable. Minerals in foods become much more bioavailable. Then there's what I would describe as detoxification, which is really the same thing as predigestion, except instead of nutritive compounds being broken down, it's toxic compounds being broken down into benign forms. And there are examples of foods all around the world that are toxic without fermentation and become safe to eat as a result of fermentation. Nutrients that are produced by the bacteria. So rather than just breaking down what's in the raw food that you're beginning with, it's metabolic byproducts of the bacteria. You know, some of these are B vitamins, and in general, fermented foods have higher levels of B vitamins than the raw foods you begin with. And some of these are unique micronutrients that are really just beginning to be explored. But, you know, for instance, in sauerkraut, there are compounds called isothiocyanates that are regarded as anti-carcinogenic, that are metabolic byproducts of the bacteria as they digest vegetables. Then finally, what I would consider to be the most profound nutritional benefit of fermentation would be live bacterial cultures. Not all fermented foods have live bacterial cultures. A loaf of bread coming out of the oven, the bacteria have been killed by heat. A can of sauerkraut sitting unrefrigerated on a shelf in the supermarket, that also has been heat processed, killing the bacteria. But fermented foods that are not heated or cooked after their fermentation contain living bacterial cultures, in many cases dominated by lactic acid bacteria. They can help to replenish and diversify the bacteria in our own intestine. And also they stimulate the immune system. It seems that they stimulate some of the brain chemistry. And so, you know, really every week there are new studies, you know, demonstrating just how important bacteria are to every aspect of our health and well-being. So, I mean, in terms of my personal health, I mean, sure, I've been living with HIV for, 24 years now. And, you know, I take HIV meds. I mean, I wish the story I could tell you was just eating fermented foods, prevented the HIV from progressing in my body, and that's not really the case. But I can tell you that the meds that I take, most of the other people who I've met who take them have digestive problems as a result of them, and I've never had that. So I think that the fermented foods help keep my digestion healthy. My overall immune function has been great, and, you know, bacteria definitely play a huge role in our immune function. And so, you know, I think that, you know, regularly, you know, eating these bacterially rich foods has something to do with that. Unfortunately, there is a limited amount of structured research about this, clinical trials. I mean, you know, there's a vast body of clinical trials for probiotic capsules because those are all proprietary, and the owners of those proprietary strains, conduct these expensive trials to demonstrate their effectiveness at all sorts of things. But nobody owns the traditional ferments, and so nobody's really investing in trials like that. There's some evidence, but a lot of it is anecdotal. I mean, the latest bit of anecdotal evidence, which was very interesting, was that, you know, young people who eat sauerkraut experience less social anxiety. All sorts of, you know, aspects of, you know, well-being can definitely be affected by the health of the bacterial communities in our intestines. And it goes way beyond, you know, digestion and immune function.
So what do you think the next piece of research that needs to be done? Just looking into the natural probiotics that are in ferments themselves, or is there some more substantial or other types of research out
there?
Yeah,
sure. I mean, I would love to see clinical trials of, just eating traditional fermented foods. I mean, it's not a question of not knowing what bacteria are in them. They're broad communities of bacteria. Whenever you take, raw natural ingredients, it's not like there's a single bacteria. Single bacteria is very much a technological idea. 150 years ago, Louis Pasteur did that for the first time. In the natural world, a single bacterium never existed. Bacteria exist in communities. All of the traditional ferments actually are embodiments of broad communities of bacteria. And frankly, that's what, that's why I believe they're more powerful probiotic agents than capsules that contain, a billion copies of one or two cells.
Well, it's wonderful to hear that it's been so helpful for you in your healing and also others you've talked to.
But I try to be very, very careful. I mean, I hear reports from people all the time who tell me that their digestion has, dramatically improved or that other health problems have. But I think that, there also are people who are making, unsubstantiated claims. There are people out there who say, like, oh, drinking kombucha is going to cure diabetes. And I think that it is unreasonable to expect a particular food to cure a particular disease. And we have to look, more broadly and say that as a group, these bacterially rich foods can improve digestion, they can improve overall immune function, they might improve mental health, and they represent no risk. And they can be very helpful, but I don't think it's reasonable, and I've been trying very hard to not promote the idea that, eating a lot of sauerkraut is, will reverse HIV or anything else. It's much more general than that.
Right. Okay, let's shift gears here a little bit. There's a lot of interest and history in Kodiak and living off the land, collecting wild plants like seaweed and fiddleheads, collecting blueberries, salmonberries. Right now there's tons of salmonberries showing up, fishing. I know we can ferment most anything, but do you have any recommendations for fermenting these local foods that would taste especially good?
Well, sure. I mean, where I live in Tennessee, there's a great tradition that people call country wine. And that would be like blackberry wine, elderberry wine. But you can use exactly the same techniques with, salmon berries or other kinds of berries. So anywhere that is, where people have access to abundant berries, I mean, I would encourage them to make simple country wines. My basic recipe would be fill up a crock or vessel with berries. The more berries you have, the better. Guesstimate, roughly what the volume that the berries are filling and figure about half that volume, mix up a sugar water solution, about one part water, six parts water to one part sugar. So you make a sugar water solution, cover the berries in that, and then just stir it every day. Cover the, stir the berries in the water really vigorously, and it'll start to bubble. Keep stirring them. After about a week of bubbling, there's hardly any color or flavor left in the berries, and the color has all migrated into the solution. There's more liquid because the berries have lost most of their liquid into the solution, strain it out, either enjoy it young as a very lightly fermented, still sweet wine, or else get it into an airlocked vessel and ferment it for a couple of months and then bottle it, and then, you know, you can enjoy a berry wine. You know, that's one great thing you can do. If you have fiddleheads or greens or just vegetables from a garden, I would recommend, you know, fermenting vegetables. I mean, sauerkraut is generally what I'd recommend, you know, is the first thing for anybody to make. And, you know, if we have a couple of minutes, I could just describe the process for making sauerkraut.
Sure, go ahead.
Great. We leave vegetables out exposed to air, especially if we chop them up and make lots of surface area. That air exposure is going to support the growth of mold. And so our strategy for getting the lactic acid bacteria to dominate rather than the mold is to get the vegetables submerged. We could just pour water over them, but the water would dilute the flavor. So typically what we try to do is pull the water out of the vegetables. So you chop them up, you lightly salt them. I really recommend just salting to taste if you have no idea what to do with that. You know, think about, 1.5% salt by weight. But just lightly salt it. There's no magic number. Just you trust your taste buds, and it doesn't have to be extremely salty at all. Just lightly salt them. The salt starts pulling juice out of the vegetables, and I like to get in there with my hands, especially if I'm doing a small batch, and just squeeze the vegetables hard for a couple of minutes. What you're doing is breaking down cell walls, bruising the vegetables, helping the cells release their juices. And you'll notice that the vegetables, after 5 minutes of that, get really juicy. You pick up a handful and squeeze it, and it's like a sponge, and juice comes out. Then you can fill your vessel. I would recommend using jars, like wide-mouth quart-sized jars. A quart takes about 2 pounds of vegetables, and you just sort of stuff it into the jar with some force, fill the jar nearly to the top, leave a little bit of space for expansion, press down the vegetables hard so you're forcing the solids down and liquids up so the vegetables become submerged. Then I like to ferment it right on my kitchen counter so I can loosen the top and release the pressure that's going to build up, because this is a life process that involves the production of carbon dioxide, so you have to release some pressure. And then while I do that, I press down and make sure the vegetables get submerged, and after 3 or 4 days of that, I start tasting it. And, you know, some people love their fermented vegetables mild after just, you know, 3 or 4 days. You know, people, you can leave them, especially if you have an unheated space, like a cellar. I mean, you could leave them, you know, for months and months and months, and they'll be just fine. I mean, this has been a strategy for survival in temperate places with limited growing seasons, and it's very easy to make. What I've described is a small scale, a quart, but, you know, I also do this in 55-gallon oak barrels, and you could do it in any scale in between, in a gallon jar, a plastic bucket, a ceramic crock. You know, there's lots of different vessels you can use, but a wide-mouth jar is something that's easily available and you might have in your kitchen already.
So I'd be remiss if I didn't ask one last question here. Kodiak has a ton of slugs, which gardeners are in constant battle with. And in your book, you mention an old-time method of pest control where one collects and then ferments a pest and then sprays it on the plants. Have you tried this method? Does it work? Could it work with slugs?
I couldn't tell you if it works with slugs. I have tried it with some other pests with mixed results, but I've never tried it with slugs. Right where I live, I don't have a big slug problem. One summer, I gardened in Maine, and we had a big slug problem. And what I found worked really well was putting cups of beer out, and the slugs would drown in the beer. So, but I think it would be a great thing to try.
Sander Katz, thank you for talking with us today.
Okay, well, I can't wait to come up there. Thanks for having me.
Sander Katz will be giving his workshop on the art of fermentation on July 31st at 5:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library. Thanks for listening to Beyond the Cover. Until next time, happy reading.
What a great interview. Thank you, Tayton and Sandor, for that. I look forward to hearing more about fermentation on July 31st at 5:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library. Speaking of the workshop, it would be fun if people coming could bring a pickled or fermented product for our culture swap table. So if you have a sourdough or kimchi, maybe pickles, anything cultured, bring it. And everybody that brings something to the culture swap will get a ticket. And then we'll have people come up and take something from the table. So you can bring something and take something different home with you, hopefully. And we'll share our knowledge of what we do pickling and fermenting. So next on our show, we have a local, Vellene Wild, is with us today to talk about another upcoming event that the KPLA is helping her put on. Vellene, do you want to tell us a little bit more, please?
Yes, I am super excited that KPLA is helping us bring Dr. Susan Lawton to Kodiak to do a presentation on August 17th in the evening at the library. And it's Feeling Good in Kodiak with Essential Oils. Dr. Susan Lawton, who is a co-author of Living Healthy and Happily Ever After, offers the opportunity to enjoy a better quality of life through gentle lifestyle changes to support our body systems. Adjusting our thinking process can take time and focus. Family patterns are often difficult to overcome. At times, we have beliefs that don't serve us anymore and need to be changed. And we have several techniques that anyone can use.
Yeah, what's going on at the workshop? Will there be a demo or will people be making their own oil blends?
So we'll have some simple essential oil application suggestions, some neurological techniques, and we're going to do a hand technique using really gentle moves. This hands-on material is for the beginner or the experienced oil user.
What kind of oils does Dr. Lawton prefer? Does she have a preference in the type of essential oil that she uses?
The essential oils that Dr. Lawton uses and that I personally use are doTERRA essential oils. And a big reason for that is because of the purity of those oils.
So do you use doTERRA exclusively then?
Yes, I do.
Did I ask you how long you've been working with doTERRA oils?
I personally have been using doTERRA essential oils for almost 4 years, and I actually can't imagine my life without them. You know, during the everyday challenges that we have in life here, it's really helpful to be able to use an essential oil in a diffuser in the morning to help elevate your mood, especially on those long dark rainy days, or, you know, when we tend to have sore muscles, to be able to apply them topically. Or really helpful is when our immune system is low in the wintertime and there's germs going around, and our system can be supported by using essential oils.
I actually have an oil diffuser at home too. I really love it. My favorite blend is rosemary geranium.
I can't imagine starting my morning without my diffuser.
What's your blend? What do you start your morning with? Does it change?
It changes depending on what I feel I'm going to experience for the day. Or it changes depending on what I'm getting ready for the day. I really do love the uplifting aroma of grapefruit along with bergamot and maybe adding a little patchouli.
That's great.
We're exposed to toxins every day, and what's really nice about having essential oils in your home is being able to make natural cleaning products, natural body products. I love making my own deodorant.
And they're probably cheaper too, right, than buying at the store?
Oh, yeah. I just made my own laundry soap, 5 gallons of laundry soap for probably about $6, and I can add my own essential oils, depending on the type of laundry I'm doing.
So I know because the Kodiak Public Library Association is helping to sponsor this event, I know it's pre-registration. The event is still a little under a month away, but how is it filling up?
We are really having a tremendous response to this. You know, we don't always get an educational opportunity like this to come to Kodiak. I've experienced Dr. Lawton when I've gone to doTERRA conventions every year, and to be able to have someone with this expertise in Kodiak truly is a fortunate opportunity. We are just about full, so if you want, contact me through email at vwild@gci.net, or you could even contact me down at Vision Salon.
So if you want to get into this event, you have to get in soon. It's almost filled up.
That's right. The cost of this event is $22.75, and that's to cover her travel expenses. She's graciously pretty much giving us her time And then that also includes a donation to the Kodiak Public Library Association. This is happening Monday, August 17th at the Kodiak Public Library between 6 and 8:45.
Thanks, Feline, for being on our show today and also for letting the KPLA help promote this wonderful event.
Thank you, Athenia, for being so helpful for allowing us to bring Dr. Lawton to the Kodiak Public Library.
So there you have it, Kodiak. If you're interested in attending this event on August 17th, contact Valine at vwild@gci.net or visit her down at Visions. So now let's take a little musical break. This is the song, The Day I Read a Book, by Jimmy Durant.
Yes, I've had my moments. When I look back through life, I find lots of memories remain. Certain days stay in my mind and keep running through my brain. I remember the day that Edley swam the channel. What a flash! I remember the Wall Street crash, or when Winchell first shouted, flash! But there's one day that I recall, though it was years ago. All my life I will remember it, I know. I'll never forget the day I read a book. It was contagious, 70 pages. There were pictures here and there, so it wasn't hard to bear. The day I read a book. It's a shame I don't recall the name of the book. It wasn't a history, I know, because it had no plot. It wasn't a mystery, because nobody there got shot. The day I read a book. I can't remember when, but one of these days I'm gonna do it again. Why, if you walk into my house, you'll see loads of books. And believe me, they're not there just for appearances. I press an awful lot of butterflies. I know reading is relaxing. What did Napoleon do for relaxation? He read a book. What did Lincoln do for relaxation? He read a book. What does Congress do for relaxation? They book a red. You know, I'm familiar with all the bestsellers. There's the Encyclopedia Britannia, Forever Umbriago, and a new piece of significant literature which says, Atka Gretka Batka Setka Engelafa Ala Mali Shui. How do you like that? I've been reading the life story of Mumbles. But I love good reading. Why, last week I spent 2 solid days in the library. Much to my regret, I buried my nose in a book, and what happened? I forgot which book I buried it in. A catastrophe. It wasn't a history. I know, because it had no plot. It wasn't a mystery, because nobody there got shot. One day I read a book. I can't remember when, but one of these days I'm going to do it again. Yes, sir. One of these days I'm going to do it again.
Welcome back to Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales from the KPLA. Here at the Kodiak Public Library Association, we are always looking for volunteers. If you want to help out with this radio show, if you want to join the Kodiak Public Library Association's board, or if you just want to volunteer some time, either with us or with Kodiak Library itself, contact us. We would love to hear from you. Our email address is kpla.alaska@gmail.com. You can also find us on our website at www.kodiakpubliclibrary.org. On our website, we'll have some more details about specific volunteer positions that you can get involved in, either for an hour a month or an hour a day. Now I'd like to thank those people of Kodiak that have already gotten involved by providing me a book review for our next segment, Community Roar, where we rave over amazing reads. I've loved hearing about the stories and books that are interesting and intriguing to you people, and I hope that all of our listeners will enjoy it as well. Here we go. Our first guest today is Estella Seal. Hi, Estella.
Hello. The name of my book is called King Louis Cats, and the author is Dr. Seuss, and when it was published, it was 1965. it didn't start out first fair. The King Louis cats had people hold his tail, and it shined every day. He had this person to hold his tail, and then this person got angry, so then he went to the next person, and it went all through the town, and then the last person said, "I quit," because she hated that she was the last person in line always, and no one held her tail. So at the end of the book, everyone held their own tail. It's trying to teach me that you have to do your own things, not let other people do it for you. She makes a better example to everybody else, and she makes herself the strong one and not the weak one.
Is there a favorite part of your book that you want to read for us?
Yes, there is. I'm going to talk about the end and how she freaks out. His tail would never be held up, and poor old Zooey knew it, because holding up a cat's tail takes another cat to do it. Poor Zooey got so awfully mad, so mad he could have spit, but he did a far, far braver thing. He simply yelled, "I quit! I cannot, shall not, will not lug this stupid thing around." He slammed the tail up Prootsy cats. He slammed it on the ground, and then on it went. Then Prootsy cat slammed Louie's cat tail, and Louie cat slammed Huey's, and Huey's cat slammed Shuey's cat, and Shuey slammed Cooey's, and tails and cats and steins were slammed, including proud King Louie. But at the end, and since that day, is Katzenstein, all cats have been more grown up. They are all more democratic because each cat holds its own up. Dr. Seuss was someone who really had a special thought about things, and it makes kids learn and grown-ups have fun. So I think you should really read Cooey Cats and Zian. And I actually recommend Fox and Socks.
Oh, Fox and Socks by Dr. Seuss. Is that another good one we should keep our eyes open for?
Yep.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Estella.
You're welcome.
Looking at the pictures, looking at the words. I love to read.
This is Kate, and I am reviewing a book that maybe you haven't heard of called The Madonnas of Leningrad by Deborah Dean. It's published by Harper. 2006, and it's a short novel of historical fiction. And I came upon this book in our library here while looking for books about art and painters. And the author does render elegant descriptions of Hermitage paintings, which make you want to go to St. Petersburg, or at least tour the museum website. But the book turned out to be a little treasure in itself. Stories within stories. One of a young girl, Marina Buryakov, who worked as a docent in the Hermitage Museum at the outbreak of World War II, and how she kept her sanity by recreating the museum in her mind while coping with years of starvation, bitter cold, and relentless destruction. And I quote, "No one weeps anymore, or if they do, it's over small things, inconsequential moments that catch them unprepared. What is left that is heartbreaking? Not death. Death is ordinary. What is heartbreaking is the sight of a single gull lifting effortlessly from a street lamp. Its wings unfurl like silk scarves against mauve sky, and Marina hears the rustle of its feathers. What is heartbreaking is that there is still beauty in the world." End quote. And there's a story of Marina's love, Dmitri, her childhood friend and eventual husband, despite separation during the war. And the story of present-day Marina, now 82, struggling with the onset of Alzheimer's. As the details of her daily life slip away, the recollections of her youth become more vivid, and as her past overtakes the present, there are poignant scenes as family members try to understand. Like many war survivors, she never spoke of her experiences with her children, and they will never know her past story. From her husband's viewpoint, and I quote, "It didn't matter. The bond that first brought them together as children existed whether they spoke of it or not, the bond of survivors. Here in America, a relentlessly foolish and optimistic country, what they knew drew them closer together. She was his country and he was hers. They were inseparable, until now. She's leaving him, not all at once, which would be painful enough, but in a wrenching succession of separations. One moment she's here, and then she's gone again, and each journey takes her a little farther from his reach. He cannot follow her, and he wonders where she goes when she leaves. End quote. And there's a true story, that during the 900 days of the Leningrad siege, the staff of the Hermitage and their families, 2,000 people, lived in the basement of the museum. The staff worked frantically to remove the art pieces from the museum and ship them off for safekeeping. The frames, however, were left hanging in place, perhaps as a symbol that the paintings would return someday. One of the docents who worked there began to give tours of the museum to visitors, and it was said that he would describe them so well that the visitors could almost see them. There are other more compelling, better scripted books about the horrors of the war, or about the complexities of family relationships, but this book is so creatively constructed, and I appreciated its underlying gentleness despite the sadness. It made me consider that there may be moments of dementia that are not terrifying or upsetting. And I quote from the book, "One of the effects of this deterioration seems to be that as the scope of her attention narrows, it also focuses like a magnifying glass on smaller pleasures that have escaped her attention for years. She keeps these observations to herself. She once tried to point out to Dmitri the bottomless beauty in her glass of tea. It looked like amber with buried embers of light, and when held just so, there was a rainbow in the glass that took her breath away." He nodded sympathetically, but mostly looked concerned. End quote. Maybe we onlookers are the ones more lost and confused. Anyway, find your way to this book, Madonnas of Leningrad, by Deborah Dean.
A brand new story for one I've heard. I love to read.
My name is Bob Ross. In a few minutes, it is my privilege to bring to you the first of what I hope to be a series of book reviews from my area of research and reading interest. Mainly, the local history of Kodiak from 1900 to 1946. It is my hope that through this book review series, that listeners to these broadcasts will come to appreciate one vastly underutilized area of the Kodiak Public Library, that being the Alaska Room, and its extensive reference collection of books, maps, and microfilm. I hope to share some of my enthusiasm and delight in discussing a few of these treasures I've encountered in my time spent here. For example, in a map drawer in this room can be found a town plot of Fort Kodiak as it was in 1869. It is a redrawing made in 1943 from its original, and it shows what Kodiak looked like 2 years following the United States purchase of Alaska. From this plot, I found Old Kodiak's downtown area easier to understand, especially that S-curve on the south end of Main Street that begins near where Tony's Bar stood. Today's book review is Alaska Holiday by Barrett Willoughby. This book consists of 296 pages with 7 separate stories of Alaska. This report covers only its first story, Alaska Holiday, as this is a time capsule of Kodiak before the World War II construction boom of 1939. This book is a documentary work. Barrett and her friend Zoe spent a summer month in Kodiak in the early 1930s, finding lodging, getting a bath during the height of a dry summer, meeting and dealing with some of the more charismatic locals who both help and hinder their efforts, while at the same time speculating their motives for being in Kodiak at just this particular time, are just a few of these challenges they must overcome. Unknown to them, their arrival in Kodiak follows closely on the heels of a temperance visit. The town is on pins and needles. It anticipates a crackdown on alcohol to be forthcoming out of Juneau at any time now, for this is still prohibition. For a while, the author and her friend Zoe are suspected of being either temperance spies from Juneau or sporting women, wanting to catch in on the Cold Bay oil boom, which has temporarily crowded the town as a staging area for that development. Our two vacationers are oblivious to these undercurrents and cannot figure out what has happened to that great hospitality that they had so anticipated. Thanks to a chance meeting with Bill Teal, who gives to them his own lodging in the hotel and prevents these two ladies from camping on the beach, the town's population is temporarily further increased by 2. They eventually meet Captain O'Shea, who is a bit of a shyster, Colonel James Standhope, who admits no claim to the title but prefers to be called by it, Paul Herring, the assistant U.S. Marshal, the Erskines, and a few others. Their long-term lodging requirement is satisfied through the assistant marshal, who helps secure for them Old Saul's house, the most recently vacated house in Kodiak, its last tenant, a bootlegger, having shipped himself and his operation out to Cold Bay on the heels of that temperance visit. Things are finally looking up for our girls. Except, as everyone in town knows, Old Saul's house is haunted. Now wagers are being made among the many town folk on how long these girls will last, for not one person has spent an entire night in this house for as long as anyone remembers. I really enjoyed this book and its writing style very much. I found it both entertaining and educational on 2 different reading levels. First, it is a nice story of a time period in Kodiak's history that many other writers refer to as, quote, a sleepy little fishing village, unquote. Second, it serves as a starting point for further investigations of the many snippets of Kodiak history told to Miss Willoughby during her visit and retold through this story. But do be forewarned. Not everything she has written is supported by other historical writings, which means this story is a documentary of that time, but with some potentially serious flaws. I hope you have enjoyed this review of Alaska Holiday by Barrett Willoughby and are inspired to soon check out the Alaska Room and see for yourself this tremendous Alaska reference collection. Until the next time, thank you for listening.
I love to read.
I love to read.
I love to
read. Hi, everybody. This is Astrid Mueller. I'm brand designer and web designer here on the island. And my book review is on the book Love is the Killer App, How to Win People and Influence Friends by Tim Sanders, who happens to be Chief Solutions Officer at Yahoo. Super exciting guy. So the book that I picked here is a business book, but it also works for your personal life as inspiration. So it's not just for business people. So what's the book about? It's really cool. It really resonated with me because the guy is basically promoting the idea of being a love cat. Is what he calls it. So he says, if you are super helpful, like to all the people around you, you have many more chances in life, in your career, and in really like standing out and succeeding. And he has a concept behind that. So he has 3 things that he recommends in his book. One is knowledge. The other is network, and the third is compassion. With knowledge, he actually really promotes to read like crazy, which I thought was funny to pick this book as a first book review here. So what he does is he basically started reading like a nut. He picked all the most inspiring business books he could lay hands on, and he's really thorough with them. So he kind of knows what they're about, and he highlights and he takes notes and whatnot, and he accumulates all this knowledge that he then shares with people that he meets, like in his career and business. And he tries to help people with his knowledge. That's his whole concept. So the second pillar that he mentions, the network thing, is that he basically tries to get people together so that everybody benefits. So for instance, if he meets a person who's trying to find financing for their business, and he happens to know another person who's a great financial sponsor, and he's looking to support that other kind of business, he will instantly introduce these people and help them to get together. So he's trying to be the friend of everybody and being a friend by introducing others and also by sharing knowledge whenever people need it. So by knowing all these books inside out, his thing is that he really helps business owners and people in a career to really have the right knowledge at the right time and to really get to know things that they never thought about, you know, like innovative books and innovative, unique ideas. does. So he has a ton of really cool examples how that helped him for his own career. And he really became passionate about this thing and ended up writing this book. And he himself, you can see in his own career, like how he made it up to Yahoo, like chief solutions officer. It's a great example of how you can achieve amazing things in your own career if you're just like proactively helping other people in a really compassionate, heartfelt sort of way and be as helpful as possible. I thought it was super inspiring. So this book, I recommend it to anybody who runs their own business or who has a career you're trying to get up there, or even for your personal life. There's a lot of inspiration for your own attitude, or even just to read books and like how he goes about it, you know. There's a lot of cool stuff in there. This is about it from my book review here. So I hope that you'll find a way to at least take a peek in that book. It's actually in the library as soon as I bring it back. So again, the title was Love is a Killer App, How to Win People and Influence Friends by Tim Sanders, who's Chief Solutions Officer at Yahoo.
I love to snuggle up and read with somebody like you.
Wasn't that fun? The people of Kodiak sure are reading some great books. So we only have one more segment left on our show today, and that's Lively Live Chats with Katie Baxter. But before I turn it over to Katie, I just wanted to remind you again that if you have a book review you'd like to give us, or if you want to help out with this show or with the Kodiak Public Library Association in any way, we want to hear from you. You can email us at kpla.alaska@gmail.com or visit us at www.kodiakpubliclibrary.com. This has been the first ever show of Dog-Eared Reads, and we'll be back in a month with more reviews and interviews. All right, Katie, take it away.
Welcome to the Lively Live Chat segment. This segment of today's program is brought to you by various staff of Kodiak Public Library. I'm Katie. For the next several minutes, you'll hear about books and films that have made a splash at the library with staff and patrons. I'll fill you in on library book clubs, upcoming library events, and tips about how your library unleashes a world of reading and listening fun for you this summer. It's no secret that Kodiak has an abundance of reading clubs across the city, Bell's Flats, Villages, Menashka, and beyond. The public library alone has 10 clubs for readers ages 6 to 106. All of these library clubs are announced each month on the takeaway calendar, available at the library main desk, posted on the library's website, or listed in the newspaper. These clubs are easygoing because of their combination of discussion and socializing. And here's the secret. You don't even have to read the whole book. If it's been a while since you've read the book, that's okay as well. People read from their favorite parts, give summaries, pose general questions, and find ways to loop you into the discussion. The library purchases a few copies of each title in print, ebook, and audio formats, so that you don't have to feel pressured to buy a book. Just borrow a library copy. For youth, we have the Reds Reading Club, the Pinks Reading Club, the Silvers, and yes, you've guessed it, the King's Reading Club. All summer, these youth clubs for ages 4 through 17 have been meeting to read books that are on the 2015 Battle of the Books tournament list. Battle of the Books is an island-wide venture of various school students, homeschoolers, and it's an enjoyable event for all of the community. For ages 18 to 118, we have reading clubs like Serial Readers. That's a cool group that Lisa started up this summer for people who might not have time to read long books, but certainly read newspapers and magazines and want to talk about interesting articles. Then we have Listen Up. That's a group that Penny started. And those folks gather one Saturday a month, and they listen to a recording of various commentaries of classics like Call of the Wild, The Things They Carried, among several other audiobook commentaries that the National Endowment for the Humanities put together. And people come and listen to those commentaries and then discuss the book and watch a film. And then we have the Roving Readers Club. Last week, the Roving Readers Club discussed King of Fish, The Thousand-Year Run of Salmon by David Montgomery. As many listeners may know, King of Fish is the book Kodiak's own Aaron Harrington selected as the statewide read for Alaska's Salmon Project. In the book, the story of salmon is rolled out as the story of changing landscapes. The author, David Montgomery, a geomorphologist, that's a scientist who studies the structure, origin, and evolution of the Earth's surface, tells us that he finds himself drawn to the connections between river and salmon, something that Kodiak can relate to. He considers serious impacts on salmon in Europe, New England, and the Pacific Northwest throughout thousands of years. The chapters are about 20 pages long, and the book includes illustrations by Ray Troll. Ray Troll is that favorite Alaskan artist who presented at Kodiak Public Library this past March. Reading Rovers caught on right away. The best way to chat about salmon history was to do so while eating salmon. Hence, Reading Rovers were inspired to hold a salmon burger cook-off. The winner last week was Elena, with her salmon patties combined with fresh chives, parsley, eggs, feta cheese, and lemon. Those salmon patties were yummy. Elena walked away with a certificate and plenty of lemons, parsley, butter, and dill to use in her next batch of salmon patties. Thanks to the Roving Readers Book Club and to the Salmon Project for providing the motivation to read King of Fish, The Thousand-Year Run of Salmon by David Montgomery. Next month's Reading Rovers pick is the 1972 work of magic realism called Bless Me Ultima by Rudolfo Anana. While its rural New Mexico setting of the 1940s may seem to take us far away from Kodiak, the book's themes of indigenous cultural ways, family connections, and forces of nature, as well as the importance of medicinal herbs in a rural setting, are sure to generate discussion about Kodiak culture and family traditions. Roving Readers will meet at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, August 18th, to discuss the book Bless Me Ultima. The library will then be showing the film adaptation of the book that Friday night, August 21st, at 6:30 p.m. As we continue this segment, Lively Live Chats, I do want to give you a library tip for recommending books and films to be added to the library's collections. You can always go to the library webpage on the City of Kodiak website. When you get there, click on Search Library Catalog. Then click on I Need Material. You'll see a Recommend to Order button. Click on that, and then just type in the title and the author and any other significant information you may have, but generally title and author will do it. Then click the Send button at the bottom of the page. It's as easy as that. Library staff gather all the recommendations from our patrons and will consider your recommendation for purchase. During the next Lively Live Chat, I'll have Penny and Ellie in the studio to discuss the different film series the library hosts on a monthly basis. You'll hear about book-to-film selections and reviews prepared by our filmgoers. Until then, mark your calendars for the library's author meet and greet with Sander Katz on Friday, July 31st at 5:30 p.m. Sander is a renowned luminary in the art of food fermentation. He has a wonderful book, Food Fermentation Traditions from Around the World, as well as a smaller cookbook. Both of these books will be at the presentation. He'll be doing a hands-on demonstration of various fermentation of food techniques. And then the Kodiak Public Library Association will be making his books available for sale. And Sandra will be there to sign copies of your books. These will make wonderful gifts for your personal library or as wedding presents or for family gifts and occasions to explore the many different uses of fermentation techniques in our food preparation. Sandor is coming to the library thanks to the work of the library's Kitchen Gardeners series, along with the sponsorship of the Kodiak Public Library Association. Lisa from the library staff is reminding everyone that the event does include a culture swap table. So if you are already involved in preparing fermenting foods, please feel free to bring along a pickled or fermented food. This is Katie from Kodiak Public Library, wishing you lots of time to enjoy your stacks of books.
Simple list of pleasures, the world at its best.